Welcome everybody to a day in the Telesummit. It's about how you live, taking the fear out of conversations about advanced care planning, serious illness, and end of life care. And one of the most difficult situations that a lot of people in America are facing right now is Alzheimer's. And so we are really fortunate to have two experts, not one, but two today, experts in the field of Alzheimer's. So we have Courtney Donahue and Catherine Lambert. So welcome, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
We're very excited. This is like a two for one. This is exciting. So we've got a lot of information to cover, and I think it's going to be really, really extremely helpful and beneficial to all the viewers. But before we do that, I would like to give a little bit of a bio, a little bit of background to those watching. Okay, so Corey is the brunette. So Corey joined the Alzheimer's Association Western Carolina chapter in December 2015. She serves as Director of Program Services for the chapter and has oversight for educational programs, family support services, and community outreach in their 49-county footprint. Prior to joining the association, she worked in long-term care as an administrator for assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing communities. She has a PhD in educational leadership. Courtney and her husband Mark live in Matthews, North Carolina with their 9-year-old son Jackson, two dogs and a fish. Then Catherine, the blonde, Catherine Lambert joined the Alzheimer's Association Western Carolina chapter in April 2014 as its chief executive officer. Catherine works with a volunteer and staff team across the 49 counties in central and western North Carolina to achieve the association's mission to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through advancement of research, to provide and enhance care and support for all affected, and to reduce the risk of dementia through the promotion of brain health. In January 2017, Catherine's role with the association expanded to serving as the regional leader for all chapters in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Native of Charlotte, Catherine earned her bachelor degree in political science with a certificate in marketing and management from Duke University and has achieved her CFREs, which is Certified Fundraising Executive designation. So, we're very qualified experts we got here today. Thank you guys so much for being here. And before we get into some questions, because we got a lot of ground we want to cover, but I did want to ask Corey, you've got a personal experience with a couple of your aunts that I just wondered if you might be willing to share to kind of get us rolling here.
Absolutely, Tina. Thank you for the chance. And I hear all too many people share a similar story. I watched my mother well over 25 years ago now. I watched her at the time, a working mom, two children, also be a full-time caregiver for my great aunt Lily and my grandmother's sister. And 25 years ago, we didn't know what it was. We knew enough that she was having a series of strokes, and we assumed it was just that if we had known then half of what we know today, Aunt Lillian's life would not have changed, but the quality of her life and the quality of my mother's life as caregiver would have changed. There are many things that we would have done differently, understood better, both in caring for Aunt Lillian and in supporting my mom through that journey. So it's remarkable to be here today and be able to provide that care and support to families so that they don't have to have those experiences.
Right, right. We've come a long way, but of course there's so much more.
There's a long way to go, absolutely.
Yeah. So I would like to get into some questions for you folks, and this is just such a big topic and there's so many things to talk about. So we're going to try to cover as much as we can in our time together. So what is the state of Alzheimer's disease in our country right now? I don't know, Catherine, if you'd like to tackle that one.
Absolutely. You know, I think this is probably the single largest public health crisis that we're currently facing. It is the sixth leading cause of death, and that's with the documented cases, the ones we know about, and who knows what that number would move to with everyone else who maybe isn't diagnosed today and is just exhibiting symptoms. But it's the only leading cause of death that has no way to effectively treat, no way to slow progression of the disease,
and no cure and no way to prevent. So that sounds very hopeless. We are not hopeless. We are very hopeful. But the current state is significant in terms of the public health crisis. The trajectory of the disease, currently 5.3 million Americans are living with the disease. Right here in North Carolina, it's about 160,000 individuals with the disease. And when you look at this disease, it's unlike any other in that it impacts an entire family. Corey was just talking about her aunt and her mother. If every individual with the disease has about three caregivers, whether it's a spouse, a parent, a child, or some combination thereof, we're talking about close to, you know, edging up on a million people just here in North Carolina that are being impacted by this disease today. And these numbers, if there is no way to prevent or slow or hopefully one day cure, by 2050, we're looking at these numbers tripling. So it is definitely something that I think, whether it's the medical community, the advocacy and awareness of members in the House and Senate are saying, we've got to look at this from all angles and come up with some solutions.
And our viewers are from all over the country and actually a few international countries. So I think you just came back from an international conference, did you not? So, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but is there a number like worldwide?
Worldwide, I believe the number is close to 50 million individuals worldwide. And everybody is in on this. You're right. The conference I just came from was the Alzheimer's Association International Conference. It's held every year. This year, it was held in London. And there were over 5,000 individuals in attendance from over 65 countries. The vast majority of those folks were not like me. They were actual researchers digging into all the different angles, prevention, treatment, hopefully things that lead to a cure. And there was a lot of hope at that conference. It's not typical for researchers to necessarily come together and share data and collaborate in the way that researchers in this space are. And so the leading funders, just to say that everybody really is in the same, the United States government, the National Institutes of Health, is the largest funder of Alzheimer's research currently. It's about to be $1.8 billion directed annually to this. The Chinese government is the second largest funder, and then the Alzheimer's Association is the third. So lots of folks in this game looking to make a difference.
And are there areas of the world that it seems to be more prevalent or less prevalent, and do we know reasons why, or is it just pretty much, it's just, you know, everybody's at risk?
Everybody with a brain is at risk. There are some countries that show lower incident rates, but in many cases, if you look at the life expectancy of those populations, the life expectancy doesn't make it to 65. And so the two largest risk factors are, one, having a brain, which we all do, and then being over the age of 65, though we are seeing more and more cases under 65. But there are some countries, predominantly in Africa, that their life expectancies are much shorter, so we do not see the same prevalence of the disease there.
Right. And just to share a very personal quick story before we move to the next question, the woman that hired me 12 years ago at hospice, her mother died at 53, I believe, of early onset Alzheimer's. Her aunt, her mother's sister, same thing. She was diagnosed with it about 5 years ago. She is now in hospice care. And we're the same age. We're both 60 years old. So it's just so scary and sad. And like you say, affects so many people, family, friends. I'm sure I would be shocked if not every single viewer watching this, and there will be thousands, don't have an experience to tell. So thank you for all that both of you continue to do. So let's talk real quickly. Corey, maybe you want to address, what exactly is Alzheimer's disease? Maybe talk about that in comparison with dementia. I know Ed Shaw is another expert in the TEL Summit, and he tried to distinguish between the two. So if you can maybe explain to the viewers, what is Alzheimer's?
Absolutely. And I will say that we frequently, in multiple spaces, use those terms synonymously. Technically, dementia is the umbrella term. It is the general term for loss of memory, and other cognitive abilities severe enough to interfere with daily life. So I often, in some of our general education classes, say, imagine the umbrella. Dementia is that umbrella term under which are housed these families of cognitive decline diseases, of which Alzheimer's is the most common. Currently accounts for anywhere from 60 to 80% of dementia-related diagnoses is Alzheimer's. And, you know, Alzheimer's is a progressive degenerative brain disorder that ultimately, as Catherine was talking about, is fatal. There is no cure at this point.
So how do you know if you have dementia or if you have Alzheimer's? I know Alzheimer's is dementia, but like what would distinguish Alzheimer's as being, okay, you've got Alzheimer's.
You've got Alzheimer's versus you have another condition that is promoting. That is, and we would clearly say there are, of course, as we age, you know, we change. And as we age, we lose brain cells and we tend to slow down. And if we weren't particularly gifted in areas younger, we're not going to be as we age. So the key difference is to look at signs and symptoms that are interfering with daily life, that an individual is losing function in daily life. So it's not, I often use the example that my dad in his 80s has switched to wearing slip-on shoes because he does not feel safe bending over and tying his shoes. He knows how to tie those shoes. He knows the purpose. He's made a very cognitive decision. An individual, however, a sign that something may be wrong would be that the individual no longer knows the function of, you know, no longer recognizes I need to tie this shoe, can no longer make the judgment it's not safe for me to lean over to do whatever I'm doing. So we do an education, a gateway program called Know the 10 Signs, where we try to know the 10 signs.
Okay.
And it's a campaign that tries to bring awareness to what are some signs and symptoms that when you are seeing and experiencing these, whether it's yourself or a loved one, you need to start with the physician. You need to get to the physician's office. Ultimately, a neurologist is going to diagnose Alzheimer's. But along that way, they're going to rule out everything else. And there are certainly some conditions, Tina, that present and for women, is very common. Can exhibit some symptoms that are actually connected to other acute medical. So we tell anybody with any concern that you need to go to the doctor, and you need to go to the doctor with a record of what's been going on. Track what's happening. When is it happening? Who's there when it's happening? Right. And then you will begin that journey of a whole physical assessment.
Okay, great. Awesome. Okay, so Catherine, maybe you can speak to how does the Alzheimer's Association help?
So we are a great wraparound and support with the medical community. So we are not the doctors, although we have wonderful scientists and medical professionals on our staff in our home office. But at the local chapter levels, we are here to provide that support both to the individual living with the disease, depending on what stage of the disease they're in. We have some early stage support programs where we help someone understand how to live their best life at wherever stage they are. And a lot of our work is really around those families that are trying to figure out how to make the best legal and financial decisions. We're connecting them to community resources as the disease progresses. So does the care plan for that individual and that family. What worked last month may not work now. Teams will meet steps and resources that are available in the community for them. We have advocacy, and we find that a lot of families and individuals living with the disease and those families want to be a part of advocating and telling their congressional representatives exactly what's going on, exactly what's not available for them and what they need and how they need that support in Washington and in their local state capitals. So it's really around educating. So as Corey was saying, is this normal aging? You know, the other night I couldn't find my car keys and I thought, is this that moment? And then I thought, no, I know where they are because I can backtrack through it. That would be something like, I know the 10 signs. Communication we offer with and a bit of interaction. So how do you help someone redirect when they're focused on one thing that really isn't going to happen or, you know, it is not feasible? And so how do you redirect where someone is? So it's that education, it's the support, and then it's the advocacy for them and what they need.
Gotcha. That's wonderful. So Corey, what are some of the educational programs that you guys offer?
I put them in a couple buckets. As Catherine was saying, what would be our gateway or our entry level programs? The basics, know the 10 signs. That's really about awareness and an overview of the disease. And then we have a portfolio of programs that are specific to certain situations. So again, communication and what happens over the course of the disease, both for the individual. That helped very much in education, but also in preparing for the future and planning ahead. As well, both for healthcare professionals and, for example, for first responders. Here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where one of our offices is, we work with the police department and the dispatchers. Wonderful. On general awareness and approaches and common situations. Most of our chapters across the country do also sponsor a deep dive program. So it may be a symposium or a conference that brings in speakers that has a broad breadth of topics offered, and we can bring in some of those legal experts and bring in individuals to tell their stories. So quite a variety. Many of our programs are available online as well.
Okay.
Our national website, and then for all of your listeners, they could call that helpline 1-800-272-3900 and get connected to a local chapter. In addition to the classic PowerPoint education presentations, there is a wealth of resources online to help connect people and help them navigate.
Sorry to ask, how did the people in Wisconsin connect with their local resources? So perfect. That's good.
Yep. The two easiest ways are that 1-800-272-3900 and also the website, www.alz.org. And based on their zip code, they can plug that in and then the site will connect you to the closest chapter to them for some more local resources.
Perfect. Wonderful. Let's see, you guys mentioned advocacy as a way the Alzheimer's Association helps. So I don't know, Catherine, is there anything more you want to add to what Corey was saying as far as how Alzheimer's Association helps people be that advocate?
Sure. So we rely on individuals in every single state to be advocates and ambassadors, both at the state level and at the federal level. We're very organized. Each spring we, I would say, descend, because it's about 1,200 advocates from all 50 states come to Washington, D.C., and we meet with every single one of our congressional members or their staff teams and talk about what are some of the things at the federal level that we need their help with. And so that's been instrumental over the last few years in increasing directed funding to National Institutes of Health from about $400 million several years ago to now almost $1.8 billion. So that's been huge. Now Medicare covers dementia care planning. So that's a big part of what we advocated for as well, that should be something that was happening at the state levels. You'll see basically what legislation, and it's different in every state. We're working to make sure every state has an Alzheimer's disease state plan for that state specific to it. Across the country, everybody's in varying stages. We're almost to 100% of every state having that. Form adult guardianship is something locally that we've just finished advocating for. If you've gone through the process in another state of declaring yourself the adult guardian for, say, a parent, and you need to relocate them to another state, that was not universally recognized. And so each state is trying to put that in so that, again, it's easier for a caregiver to not have to reestablish that when caregiving is their key priority. So lots of policy going on, and you know, it's when you have someone with you that is able to tell their personal story of having to start that process over when they relocated their parents. So both very active at the state level and at the federal level, in just ensuring that we have the right funding, but that we also have the right policies and in place to protect and help our families and those living with the disease.
And you have to believe the people in D.C. that you're speaking with, so many of them have to have had their own personal experience, that their heart is all about it, right?
We have some wonderful champions, and many of them, some of them get the business aspect of this, that this is not a sustainable financial disease for our country, but many have their own personal, I know one of our two state senators, the last time we visited, he put his foot up on the table and rolled up his pants and said, "I have my purple socks on," and told us his story of being a caregiver for his grandmother, along with his aunts and mother. And so I think for those, they have quickly become champions for this cause because they've lived it. They've walked a mile in those shoes.
Absolutely. Lordy, absolutely. So what would you recommend for someone who has just been diagnosed?
1-800-273-3900. We would recommend a call to the helpline to launch that connection. As Catherine mentioned, and I'll just hold up here for your viewers, it's the Medicare billing code that just went into effect at the beginning of this year. And this is fabulous because it has really helped our chapters locally partner with area physicians. Physicians can now bill for care planning, and part of that care planning, if the physician's office doesn't have the bandwidth to provide those wraparound services, they can refer those individuals and families to us for those wraparound services. And that can be, again, referrals to getting your power of attorney into place. It can be help with care planning. So I would certainly recommend that a family experiencing a recent diagnosis call that 1-800 helpline, get connected to the local chapter, find out the programs. Very likely that local chapter is going to have some sort of direct connect program with a physician's office. They're also very likely going to have what we call an early stage program, which takes those folks, irregardless of age, so whether this is early onset or the typical later onset, there are very specially designed education, support group, and social engagement programs for those individuals and their care partners. So absolutely, those would be my initial recommendations. They can then key into support groups, they can key into education programs, and they may find many, we've got some very active individuals in the early stage who are using advocacy as part of their cause and their purpose.
So I have a personal friend who, his wife had early onset, and I think one of her parents did, so she sort of anticipated as she was going through her life, I may wind up with this disease, and she did. And this was probably, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years ago. And at that time, there weren't any support groups for the patient with early onset. And she was really desperate for that and wanting that. And so now I'm so happy that there are these support groups for the patient with early onset because they know what's coming and they need support while they can still, you know, participate. That's fabulous.
I think one of the first things I would say too is it's a daunting diagnosis. And particularly as you said it with your friend who's watched a parent go through this, I think we all make assumptions about any disease that someone may have had 20 or 30 years ago. And so the first thing I would say is to breathe, to take a really deep breath. And it would be very easy, I think, to lose hope. But to say there is hope, there are options, and there are services, as Corey mentioned, the 800 number and some other things where we can help someone try to live the best life. We can also connect with, we have a program called Trial Match, which is a large database of clinical trials. It continues to grow every single day. You do not have to have a diagnosis. In fact, I'm registered through Trial Match. And so you can go in and it's online. It takes maybe 20 minutes. And you will get occasionally emails and it will tell you about different clinical trials for which you may be eligible. And then you opt in to anything.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
You want to opt in. So I think a lot of folks for early stage folks are saying, hey, I want to be a part of finding the solution, whether that's maybe going to benefit me or whether that's going to benefit future generations.
Right.
I think there are a lot of ways for people to control their own destiny through this journey.
And I think that's huge. I know in hospice care, something that the patients struggle with is the fact that they're losing control over their life. You know, they know they're going to die and they just don't have a whole lot of control about how well they can walk or drive or this and that. So I would think the very same thing would be present with Alzheimer's diagnosis. And of course, this can last for years and years.
Well, and the earlier we're able to diagnose, and the earlier our medical community is able to diagnose, the earlier a family says, something's not right. And even if it's ruled out as something that is a sleep disorder, I know I can't pull an all-nighter successfully at this age, and maybe I could have at 18. You know, when we don't sleep as well, which can be for a variety of reasons, that can cause memory loss. So sometimes things can be ruled out, but the earlier someone is able to have a diagnosis, the more control over their future, whether that's financial decisions, legal decisions, advanced care directives, whatever that is, they're able to make those decisions and be in control of them. I think for this disease for so many years, I would almost say grandchildren could diagnose this disease. You know, where people wouldn't necessarily talk about it, and then someday a grandchild would say, why doesn't grandma know who I am anymore? So
right.
I think we are getting much more aware and concerned as a community, but the earlier folks go to talk to their doctors, whether it is Alzheimer's, another form of dementia, or something else, the better they are in terms of what services and opportunities are available to them through their journey.
And you know, the theme of this entire telesummit is about taking the fear out of having these conversations. So when you notice something or something doesn't seem quite right, don't be afraid. And of course, nobody wants bad news, but you are empowering yourself and your future by figuring out what's going on as soon as possible and then seeing what you can do about that to make the most of the situation.
That's exactly right.
Yes. So we're coming up on our time here. What I want to do is, how can folks get involved, and are there any last minute, or not last minute, but are any kind of tips or advice or words of encouragement or any kind of overarching message you would like to leave the viewers with?
So this year, the association has really been focusing on a theme of the first survivor. And we truly believe that we will have that. And some of that messaging is coming through our Walk to End Alzheimer's, which happen nationwide. There are over 600 walks in all states across the country that happen in September and October. And we have flowers there that designate a blue flower as someone living with the disease. A yellow flower is someone who is a caregiver. And so forth. And so there this year for the first time, there will be a single white flower on the stage at each walk, which indicates that future first survivor. So first, come to a walk. Most of our walks have hundreds, if not thousands, of participants, depending on which walk across the country that is. Again, those can all be found at alls.org on the web. And it is a wonderful way for us to raise the funds to do the work we do, but it is a great way to come out and celebrate maybe a loved one you've lost, a loved one that you're currently supporting, or you're just someone who is an advocate for the cause. We have a flower for that too. But to also get wrapped up in the excitement and the energy and the hope, because we do have tremendous hope. But the walk, this is a timely conversation. The walks are happening everywhere in the next few weeks.
Excellent. That's excellent. So for both of you, what lasting message would you like to leave the viewers?
I think it's exactly what Catherine has said and said so beautifully. It's about living well. And we're here to help on the side of life and to help them live well in the face of this disease and to have that hope.
And you're not alone. While we may not have every answer and every solution, these are, to your point, these are tough conversations and tough decisions that are made along the way. But we are here to help either through direct service or referrals to services. So you're not alone. I think that's the biggest message. That's what we're here for.
Wonderful. And I guess the one last thing I would leave with everybody, if you haven't seen the interview already in the series, one of our experts is Dr. Ed Shaw, who works in he heads the memory counseling service at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem. He, along with two other folks, have written a book called Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade, The Five Love Languages and the Alzheimer's Journey. So I highly recommend that book. And of course, there's probably a bazillion other books that have been written on the topic, but one of our experts in the Telesummit wrote this fabulous book, again, with two of his colleagues, and it really is wonderful. And I think particularly for the caregivers, it really speaks to the caregivers about how can they help best support their loved one that's struggling with this disease and each other. So, Catherine Lambert and Corey Donahue, thank you both so much, not only for participating in this wonderful Telesummit, but for all that you do every single day to help millions of people that are struggling with this really difficult disease. So we all, it's a really a heartfelt thank you for all your work.
Thank you so
much. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right. Take care, ladies.
Bye-bye.